It's just like,
it's just not as fun. So
this is Solidarity Journal. Share in a common voice. Just might find your own.
To think that this was John Doe.
It's like the argument about the arguments in part. No, we fought an entire goddamn war. States' right to do what?
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts.
It's Tuesday, November 1st, and you're listening to Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo. On today's show, I'll look at the recent legislation that President Obama is gearing up for to try and help college students on their loans, and what this may mean for the Occupy movements in the country. Also, I was in Springfield, Illinois this past weekend, covering the Occupy Springfield movement there, and finding out what they're doing to fight back against the corruption in their area. So stay tuned to Solidarity Journal, Frontline from Radio Resistance. Here we go! Solidarity Journal on WAZU 90.7 FM, Peoria's one and only Pacifica radio affiliate. I'm your host, Michael Perillo.
Because of this change, about 1.6 million Americans could see their payments go down by hundreds of dollars a month. We're going to make it easier for you to have one payment a month at a better interest rate. And this won't cost... It won't cost taxpayers a dime, but it will save you money and it will save you time.
That was President Obama at University of Colorado's Denver campus announcing his executive economic plan that will give student loan recipients some limited relief on their debt. Around 36 million American students are in debt, and this number surpasses the credit card debt in this country. The overall student loan debt is around $1 trillion. The average student has around $26,000 in debt. But this program is not a piece of new legislation, but just Obama speeding up the implementation of a law that Congress passed 2 years ago, under which eligible borrowers will have to pay a maximum of 10% of their income toward their student loans, down from the current maximum of 15%, and will have their remaining loans forgiven after 20 years of payments, which is down from the current 25 years. Through this program, it seems that Obama aims at some of the protesters at Occupy Wall Street, who are the youth that will be going into college, and those who are now in college or leaving. He's trying to market this as a way of alleviating student worries, but Richard Hake at WNYC Radio and Anna Sale look at why some of those at Occupy Wall Street are unmoved by Obama's program.
But isn't the president's announcement a victory for Occupy Wall Street? In other words, can we say they are the force behind this? Isn't that why the president made this speech?
Well, talking to protesters yesterday, they certainly were feeling like the president was talking about student loans because of what they're doing across the country. But that generated cynicism rather than enthusiasm. Take Jason Amati, for example. He's been at the protests since they started. He wanted the president to announce more significant reforms rather than just talking about student loans. He wanted student loan debt to be eliminated.
It's really frustrating to see how
something that's supposed to, in the language of helping us, is actually not doing anything. And we, the people have these really real concerns and mobilize to make some real answers and to look for real answers, then they make changes that have the language of solving the problem but actually don't do anything.
The pay-as-you-earn and we-can't-wait plans, which was originally slated to take effect in 2014, will now happen next year. Although some will save hundreds a month under this plan, the savings for the average student loan borrower would be probably between $4.50 and $7.75 per month. But you would have to be in a public service field to really benefit from this program. So students are going to be paying more interest in the long run if they're not in a public service. Also, students only have 6 months to apply for the interest rate reduction from January until the end of June next year. Jeff Slingo of the Chronicle of Higher Education says how this will affect college students in college right now.
It's not going to make a huge difference. I mean, between both programs, it's probably going to impact maybe about 7 million of those people in repayment or new students coming into the program. The thing about the income-based program that was announced today is that it's only going to affect students in college right now. So all of these students, these recent college grads who have graduated with a lot of debt, who are now looking for jobs and can't find them, or are doing jobs that only require a high school diploma, it's not going to provide much help to them.
Anya Kamenetz, author of Generation Debt, says how this will only applies to low-income graduates and not prenatal plus loans. Anya goes on to say how private students' loans have been growing faster than federally subsidized student loans.
Private student loans that are unsubsidized by the federal government, they're growing three times faster than these federal student loans, and they're actually on track to surpass the volume of federal student loans by 2025. So the banks are making good on their own brand of student loans, which are non-dischargeable in bankruptcy, and are a product that's far more expensive than the federally subsidized loans, and that's a really huge problem as well.
Anya also points out that this only places a Band-Aid on the problem and doesn't address the roots of the bigger problem concerning the students' debt.
This announcement by the president doesn't do anything to impact the other announcement we heard today that public college tuition rose 8% last year. That was led by a giant increase at the University of California system. And if the underlying costs of college are not addressed, it doesn't matter how you finance it, how you pay for it, the burden is going to continue to grow. And I believe that students and families have really had enough. That's what this Occupy Wall Street movement is saying. It's saying that the cost of college is getting to a point where people are questioning that value. Even if economists tell you that it's a good idea to get a college education, it just doesn't seem to add up for a lot of graduates.
So this could further increase tuition fees and not tackle the real issues at hand, but only scrape the surface level of what's happening. This is a short-term, superficial, too-little-too-late type of program that appears to be an attempt on Obama to appear more likable. But the Occupy movement is still growing in numbers across the nation. And there's more to it than just student loans. It's understood that the whole system is corrupted in this country. I've covered these grievances and how the GAs are going in Bloomington, Normal, and Peoria. So this past weekend, I trekked down to Springfield and joined protesters at Occupy Springfield for their march and rally before giving the state capitol its eviction notice. It was 10 a.m. when I arrived in Springfield. With the exception of the local farmers market, the streets were pleasantly quiet. I met up with some of the local people involved with Occupy Springfield, where they gave me a tour of the Capitol building before heading back to their place. Later on, after making signs for the march, we make our way to Lincoln statue outside the Capitol building and waited for more to show up. In the meantime, someone laid out what the logistics were going to be for that day's march.
The main thing is to keep things orderly here. The harder part is going to be the actual march. What we're going
to
do, the
plan for the marching route was to head over to the Federal building and stop in front of it, then go down to Chase Bank, and then eventually back to the Capitol building and presenting the eviction notice. Individuals were chosen to marshal the march and make sure no one would get off track or cause problems for the group. Since there were over 100 or so people in this march, each corner that had to be crossed would be carefully done so that no one would get injured and that the groups wouldn't splinter by getting so far ahead of one another. Some people in the crowd were using walkie-talkies to keep the flow of communications moving smoothly. Before we set out for the march, the Occupy Wall Street Declaration was read aloud.
They've taken our houses through an illegal foreclosure process despite not having the original mortgage. They've taken bailouts from taxpayers with impunity and continue to give executives exorbitant bonuses. that perpetuated inequality and discrimination in the workplace based on age, the color of one's skin, their sex, their gender identity, and their sexual orientation. That poisoned the food supply through negligence and undermined the farming system through monopolization. They profited off the torture, confinement, and cruel treatment of countless animals and actively hide these practices.
As things went along, the number of people began to swell while news teams showed up with cameras and microphones in hand. The sun was beating down on us and police were circling the block from time to time. Eventually, a small group of people formed at the base of Lincoln's statue. These individuals took to the microphone, saying where they were from and showing solidarity with Occupy Springfield.
How you doing, everybody? My name is Adam from Occupy Peoria. I just want to let you all know we stand in solidarity with all of you and all the Scott Olsons out there. So now is the time to get loud! Woo! Up next, we got Zach from Occupy Blono.
All
right! Yeah. So we're from Bloomington Normal. Yeah. Yeah. And we are here in solidarity, taking our state capital back.
After this, the march formed ahead and went down the street chanting and getting noticed from passers-by. After standing in front of the Chase Building and the Federal Building, we made our way back up to the Capitol Building, climbing the steps and standing right outside the Capitol Building's front doors, where the eviction notice was read aloud.
Today we gather here!
To present this notice of eviction!
To the lobbyists for the 1%. And their cohabitating servants.
In elected office.
Are hereby notified.
That your occupation.
Of the Illinois State Capitol building is terminated. You are ordered to vacate. For violation of your lease agreement. With the people of Illinois. We, the 99%.
Demand that you return.
State government to the people. Due to your violations of the public trust. We have a whole list which we will present to you. For these and other breaches.
Of the public good.
You are hereby ordered on this day.
October 29th, 2011.
National Occupy Your State Capitol Day.
To return this Capitol building.
To its rightful owner.
The people of Illinois.
Sincerely, Occupy Springfield.
You are hereby served.
Doors to the Capitol, which were blocked, and propped the eviction notice against the doors, as security inside stood far back and watched us. Afterward, people headed back to the Lincoln statue and addressed the crowd about why they were there that day. A member from the Radical Student Union presented a statement about the violent system that we live in and how it has ruined many people's lives.
We have been brought together to demand a better future for ourselves, for our children, for everyone in the world. We understand that the notice of eviction delivered today is just the first step, first contact, that the problems do not begin or end with our elected representatives. They are simply a symptom, a conditioned slave of exploitative and violent systems. Systems that prey on the weak and conspire to consume everything in their path. Our situation stems from the oppressive, exploitative, and predatory nature of the capitalist system and all of the interconnected web of institutions, values, and norms that it has affected. The forces of corruption and exploitation are permanent, persistent, and so too must be our voice. We cannot come out to a protest and then return home to passivity. We cannot take personal gains and walk away. We must remain a constant antagonism, an ever-present antithesis to the status quo. This is one of our greatest strengths as a movement. That night after night, week after week, we persist. We stand strong. We stand in solidarity with our brothers and sisters in Oakland who are the victims of state tyranny and with those around the globe who face similar fate every day. We stand to better our future for to better future for ourselves, but for all those. Hold on, I missed a little. Sorry. We stand in solidarity with freedom fighters around the world and pledge that we will not only work for a better future for ourselves, but for all those who are oppressed and exploited, for all those who suffer under the dominance of police states and unrepresentative systems that seek only to use them as fuel to feed the machines for the few. We stand up not only for the 99% at home, but for the 99% globally. We reject our government's role in violence around the world and seek to blaze a different path, a path of compassion and cooperation, of community and understanding. Together, we can build such a future, because together, there is nothing we cannot accomplish. We come here to exercise the innate power that each of us possesses, and with this power, we demand a better world for us all. One more piece. This is a time of growth for the movement, a time of building our community, connecting our networks. Together we will define this movement and together we will move forward. Each of us has our own grievances, our own demands. From these and from these will come our future. As each of us put our hearts, minds, and bodies into this movement, it will begin to take shape. If we all contribute in a way that our talents and passions are fully utilized, then it will become what we make of it. It will take shape in our image from within. No one of us has all the answers, but together, we can realize a better world for us all.
Then people from Bloomington Normal, representing Occupy Oblono, took to the front and addressed everyone with the people's mic.
White shirt!
Do you think that Illinois Wall Street deserves a tax break?
No!
Well, neither do we.
And
we are fighting against it.
Illinois Wall Street
is asking for special tax breaks. Over $50 million worth.
At this very moment.
Americans across the nation. Are raising up and saying no more. No more. You cannot give another tax break. To the top 1%. To the very ones that crash our economy. No more trickle-down economics. No more tax breaks for the rich and big corporations. No more bailouts. Corporate welfare.
With our taxes.
No more cuts to education.
Services for the most vulnerable citizens.
No more inaction or job creation. One year ago,
Illinois families
were asked to pay more taxes.
To stop draconian cuts to education.
And the essential services to the elderly and disabled. Now the wealthiest 1%
Want to steal our tax dollars.
To subsidize their profits.
Again.
No more.
If you want to make a change.
Get one of these flyers.
We are handing them out.
Go to makewallstreetpayillinois.org.
make Wall Street Pay Illinois.org.
And sign the petition.
We are the
99%.
We are the 99%.
We are the 99%.
Later on, I spoke to Jim Dixon, the man who read the eviction notice in front of the Capitol building, and asked him what brought him there that day.
The reason I'm down here is because if we don't stand together, nobody's going to have anything anymore. You know, the rich 1% have stolen it from everybody, and we need to be down here today to tell the legislators here in Illinois that we're not going to stand for it anymore, that they have to start doing what's right for the 99%. Well, we're trying to get the word out to our members about what Occupy Springfield stands for, especially the items today on the eviction notice to the legislature, and how, you know, the big corporate interests are actually controlling the legislature, how they're moving against public employees all over Illinois, how they're trying to destroy our pensions, not reform them.
And then spoke to Benny Haha, who has been involved with Occupy Springfield, and learned from an early stage how the system has been broken for a long time, and that this movement is the fix for it.
I actually came down here because I've been involved with the General Assembly of Springfield's Occupy since it started. The reason I started coming wasn't because I need a bailout or because I have a massive amount of debt, because I've lived a lot. And I knew better. Common sense said, no, I'm not going to get into debt. I'd rather have a crappy car or a crappy house. And I've been thinking like that for a long time because I went out on the road and with the do-it-yourself band, I toured the country, saw 37 states, saw a lot of the problems. And when I was in college, I learned a lot about lobbying and how you have to have a lot of money to lobby. You have to have a lot of money to get your say in the country. And I don't think that's right. I've kind of realized that there are a lot of restrictions on civilian American people and what they can do, what they are not allowed to do, and they try to use nice little words and whitewashes to stop us from doing it.
How have you seen the Occupy Springfield moving along since its birth?
Well, I have to say, we've had some snags, but the great thing about it is a couple of us, we kind of got started a little bit later than a lot of places, so a couple of us got to go see some of the other Occupy places and their perks and their flaws. And we have a pretty, considering that it's very open, we have a pretty good system set up. Yeah, we have our committees, but we don't really count on them to be proactive as much. We kind of learned, we kind of had to throw that, not throw it out, but we had to like get people to be a little more involved on their own. Like, just because I'm on one committee doesn't mean I can't do something else and vice versa. You know, I don't want to control it. They don't want to, you know. We had some issues with that, but it's lost. It's been lost over time. Like, we kind of realize that people have camaraderie for one another. I think the heart of this movement isn't so much about getting your way or getting your, like, I know some people are out here just because of healthcare or just because they have student debt or just because they want to promote Ron Paul or because whatever reason, you know. But the truth is, at the heart of it, it's a very patriotic movement. It's more, I feel like it's more about the fact that we can generally assemble and we have the right to do that and have a conversation at this point. And I know that New York is calling for people to make solutions, but it's like I said a couple weeks ago, before we can make a solution, we have to figure out what our biggest problems are. And I think most of us know that we're out here because of corporate greed and the way it affects our political system. So, you know, it's going to take a little bit to figure out exactly how we can pull that off. I mean, some people are more about the federal economy or the Federal Reserve and how that's a big corporation, or some people are more about ending capitalism, and then you got all the middle of that. I don't really know the answers to that. I just know that it's the right thing to do to come out. And the reason I can say that with an honest face is because I didn't come out here with an idea of how to fix it. I came out here because there's a problem. And the longer that we come out because we know there's a problem, and the sooner we'll figure out what it is that'll work. That should be the main point right now. A lot of people will want to say, well, you're muddying it up. You're muddying up the message. It's because a lot of people think they know how to fix things. But it's been like this for hundreds of years. Some would argue longer than that. So it just happens to be America's turn, and we happen to be in a crisis right now. Because it isn't working. We can't just go home and go to sleep at night and be okay with how it's going to be tomorrow. But some of us don't have $20 in our pocket to, you know what I mean? And people that don't come or want to argue some glorious point, they kind of miss the point that we're still trying to figure it out as a whole.
Later, I spoke with Chris Blankenhorn, who's a member of the Radical Student Union, a non-hierarchical political organization that focuses on direct action and political discourse.
When Occupy Wall Street started, we were immediately contacted by, you know, our own members and advisors and supporters outside of the RSU, and, you know, saying, what are we going to do about Occupy? What are you doing about Occupy? And, I mean, we're a dozen people on a good day, so, you know, we're focused on this Israel-Palestine. And when we heard about Occupy Springfield popping up, we very quickly were attending meetings and became a very, you know, vocal part of that group. It's something that a lot of us have been waiting for. I've been in and out of school, working in different places in the service industry and, you know, labor or, you know, manual labor. And I mean, throughout society, I've seen, you know, people who are discontent and people who want change. And there's a large portion of the population that really has been waiting for something like this. And I think that's how, I mean, I think that's a big part of the movement's success is that, you know, we've maintained a broad focus rather than narrowing as we're being pressured to. And then, you know, it's something that's been fermenting for a while.
I asked him the importance behind the eviction notice that was presented to the Springfield Capitol building earlier that day.
Well, today we did the eviction notice, and that was a major symbolic gesture. And in our RSU speech today, we mentioned that we don't see this, we see the eviction notice as a first step. You know, it's our first direct contact with the legislature and the other systems. You know, we're meeting outside Chase Bank, but I don't know if we've ever talked to a banker. I mean, I know they look out the windows when we're at our GA, but, you know, I don't know that any of them ever came out and, you know, had a conversation with us. And so this is our real first contact.
I then asked Chris about the police situation in Springfield, Illinois, and how they've been reacting to the Occupy movement.
We have, you know, despite all the things that have happened around the country, we've had a really good relationship with our police so far. I talked to the police, this Secretary of State Police that were at our event on the 15th, and, you know, they said, it's a beautiful day, we're getting paid, and we're watching people, you know, stand up for their rights and speak their mind, and this is wonderful, you know. And so we haven't had the police problems that we've had around the country, and we want to continue reaching out to our local police department. And one of the things that we've talked about is we want to write a nonviolence pledge and sign it and take it to the Springfield Police Department, you know, to say, look, we're going to deal with this nonviolently, and like, we'd like you to deal with any problems we have between us nonviolently. You know, and it's kind of a pipe dream that they would ever sign that, you know, but it's a symbolic gesture.
I then asked what type of mindset the movement in Springfield is going to have to survive the winter and not burn itself out in the end.
The core of what we need to do is be persistent. I mean, we're fighting. The traditional thing of protests is you go out for a day, you go out for a weekend at most, and then you go home. I mean, you know, you might come out next weekend, but you go home, and the systems that you're fighting don't stop fighting when you go home. They keep fighting, and they gain back ground. And so I think that's what it makes the Occupy movement so powerful, is that we're not going home. You know, we're a persistent antithesis to a persistent problem. And I think it takes that persistence to have any chance of, you know, overcoming it and creating something better for the future.
Foreclosed on our houses through legal practices. They're giving taxpayer money to executive-less corporate bonuses. They perpetuated inequality in the workplace based on age, color of skin, gender, and orientation. They profit off animal cruelty, actively hiding practices. They refuse negotiations, better working conditions. While the leaders of tomorrow are held hostage by their loans. All the debt, students get, they all own. Freedom of the press, and despite the catastrophic failures of policies
Hospitality and their determination to create a better tomorrow. Also, I'd like to thank Derek Downey for the song that's featured on today's show. If you want more information on Occupy Springfield, Bloomington Normal, and Peoria, check them out on Facebook or go online at www.OccupySpringfieldIL.org. And for Peoria, check out OccupyPeoria.org. If you want to hear today's show online, check out radio4all.net and type in Solidarity Journal to pull up the archives of past shows. And Solidarity Journal airs every Tuesday at 6 a.m. and 2 p.m. in the Peoria area. So until next time, keep up the resistance.